And did you found your society and preserve my tomb? Burton said. He had gotten used to the idea by then of having been dead, but to talk with someone who'd seen his tomb made his skin chill for a moment. Frigate took a deep breath. Apologetically, he said, Now, by the time I was in a position to do that, I would have felt guilty spending time and money on the dead. The world was in too much of a mess. The living needed all the attention they could get. Pollution, poverty, oppression, and so forth. These were the important things. And that giant, definitive biography. Again, Frigate spoke apologetically. When I first read about you, I thought I was the only one deeply interested in you or even aware of you. But there was an upsurge of interest in you in the 60s. Quite a few books were written about you, and even one about your wife. Isabel? Someone wrote a book about her? Why? Frigate had grinned. She was a pretty interesting woman. Very aggravating, I'll admit. Pitifully superstitious and schizophrenic and self-fooling. Very few would ever forgive her for burning your manuscripts and your journals.
What?
Burton had roared.
Burn?
Frigate nodded and said, What your doctor, Grenfell Baker, described as the ruthless holocaust that followed his lamented death. She burned your translation of The Perfumed Garden, claiming you wouldn't have wanted to publish it unless you needed the money for it, and you didn't need it, of course, because you were now dead. Burton was speechless for one of the few times in his life. Frigate looked out of the corner of his eye at Burton and grinned. He seemed to be enjoying Burton's distress. Burning the perfumed garden wasn't so bad, though bad enough. But to burn both sets of your journals, the private ones in which supposedly you let loose all your deepest thoughts and most burning hates, and even the public ones, the diary of daily events, well, I never forgave her. Neither did a lot of people. That was a great loss. Only one of your notebooks, a small one, escaped, and that was burned during the bombing of London in World War II. He paused and said, Is it true that you converted to the Catholic Church on your deathbed, as your wife claimed?
I may have, Burton said.
Isabel had been after me for years to convert, though she never dared urge me directly. When I was so sick there at the last, I may have told her I would do so in order to make her happy. She was so grief-stricken, so distressed, so afraid my soul would burn in hell.
Then you did love her, Frigate had said. I would have done the same for a dog, Burton replied.
For somebody who can be so upsettingly frank and direct, you can be very ambiguous at times. This conversation had taken place about 2 months after first day AR-1. The result had been something like that which Dr. Johnson would have felt on encountering another Boswell. This had been the second stage of their curious relationship. Frigate became closer, but at the same time more of an annoyance. The American had always been restrained in his comments on Burton's attitudes, undoubtedly because he didn't want to anger him. Frigate made a very conscious effort not to anger anybody, but he also made unconscious efforts to antagonize them. His hostilities came out in many subtle and some not-so-subtle actions and words. Burton didn't like this. He was direct, not at all afraid, of anger. Perhaps, as Frigate pointed out, he was too eager for hostile confrontations. One evening, as they were sitting around a fire under a grailstone, Frigate had spoken about Karachi. This village, which later became the capital of Pakistan, the nation created in 1947, had only 2,000 population in Burton's time. By 1970, its population was approximately 2 million. That led to Frigate's asking, rather indirectly, about the report Burton had made to his general, Sir Robert Napier, on houses of male prostitution in Karachi. The report was supposed to be kept in the secret files of the East India Army, but it was found by one of the many enemies of Burton. Though the report was never mentioned publicly, it had been used against him throughout his life. Burton had disguised himself as a native in order to get into the house and make observations that no European would have been allowed to make. He had been proud that he had escaped detection, and he had taken the unsavory job because he was the only one who could do it, and because his beloved leader, Napier, had asked him to.